Hola, bona tarda. Bé, doncs tenim avui la tercera taula d'aquesta Setmana Negra que, doncs, com ja sabeu, doncs, vam fer doncs, la qüestió de que tot el festival estigui integrat en una xarxa de metro. En aquest cas vam posar, perquè volíem sobretot fer molt èmfasis en la ciutat, en el país d'Islàndia, li van posar de nom l'illa. Doncs hi ha amics que estan a Illa Diagonal preguntant on es fa la xerrada. Ahir va haver una taula que era doble paral·lel i ja va haver algú, no sé si els mateixos, que vam estar pel paral·lel preguntant on es feia una xerrada. Som un país increïble. La illa que ens referíem era Islàndia, que és una illa que té unes particularitats que impregnen una mica doncs, la seva literatura i el seu art, i sobretot la gent que ho ha pogut conèixer ens va motivar molt la manera que tenen de protegir, de cuidar i de valorar els autors i els llibres, les traduccions, i tot això crec que és un bon motiu per tenir-lo. Es vam anar engrescant i finalment tenim el plaer de tenir a la senyora Elisa Reid, que és la primera dama d'Islàndia. O sigui, es van ficar i al final vam arribar a portar la primera dama d'Islàndia. Però sobretot perquè és una periodista, és una amant de la novel·la negra del gènere, és la impulsora d'un festival d'escriptors de novel·la negra d'Islàndia, i ens ajudarà molt a explicar-nos com és la literatura d'aquell país i aquesta política que jo crec que és molt interessant. Parlant amb ella, o sigui, en certa manera li vam fer una mena de xantatge, tenim a una de les millors escriptores islandeses, que és Yrsa Sigurðardóttir. Són amigues i aleshores amb aquest tàndem havien de venir les dues i aquí les tenim i li agraïm moltíssim que estigui amb nosaltres. Tinc amics que han llegit moltes novel·les negres que estan molt, molt curtits amb això de la novel·la negra. Les novel·les de la Yrsa són aquelles que diuen a vegades tinc por, o sigui que ultra recomanable. I per presentar aquesta taula, doncs el Miquel Molina, que és escriptor i periodista, doncs que ens ha agafat el repte de portar aquesta taula. I aleshores, després de la seva xerrada, tant la Yrsa com el Miquel signaran llibres a la llibreria de... Us donarem temps que aneu allà, compreu tots els llibres, els que us signin. Si a part d'ells voleu comprar d'altres escriptors, no passa res. I després us agrairia que tornéssiu perquè hi haurà una interpretació d'una de les alumnes del Centre Superior de Conservatori del Liceu, que és l'Aida Sacco, que ja es va regalar unes interpretacions a la roda de premsa i doncs, que interpretarà una peça d'Enric Satie i també dues peces de la seva pròpia composició. Aleshores, bueno, doncs tenim això i després seguirem amb una taula gèlida també, amb autors de lo que és el Nordic Noir, o sigui que tenim un parell de taules absolutament fantàstiques. Moltíssimes gràcies als que heu vingut i aquí benvinguts a Barcelona Negra.
Bona tarda a tothom. És molt excitant per mi estar participant en aquest festival Barcelona Negra, no només pel que representa pels amants de la novel·la negra, sinó de la lectura en general i de la projecció de Barcelona com a ciutat referent de la literatura. No? És un festival que ha anat creixent amb els anys i ara ja es pot considerar que és com una gran porta d'entrada a un quatrimestre que tanca el Sant Jordi, no? I que és quan Barcelona concentra tota la seva potència literària. L'altre dia, una mica de broma, el Carlos Tanón definia BC Negra com el Sant Jordi Negre, no? I s'està convertint en aquest tipus de referència. És un honor també participar en aquesta trobada amb dues representants de la literatura islandesa, que és un país del que hem d'aprendre molt pel que fa al foment de la cultura i en especial a l'hàbit de la lectura, no? Que és algo del que parlarem seguidament. Tenim amb nosaltres... és un país que, de fet, recordeu que el gran boom de la literatura nòrdica arriba aquí amb l'Stieg Larsson, autor suec, i després, concretament, després d'això ens arriba Arnaldur Indridason, no? Que és la persona que després les seves traduccions aquí obren el camí a que haguem pogut gaudir d'altres autors que estem traduint ara, no? Tenim, com ens ha comentat el Carlos Tanón, l'Isa Reid, que és una persona molt polifacètica, amb múltiples inquietuds, formada en temes de relacions internacionals, d'història, i que ha treballat a mitjans de comunicació del seu país, no? Ha col·laborat en moltes causes, temes feministes, temes socials, i especialment pel que ens afecta aquí, és la co-creadora d'un festival, no és un festival exactament, sinó una trobada que és una trobada d'autors islandesos i de fora d'Islàndia, que durant uns dies disfruten del que és el fet d'escriure junts i de compartir experiències d'escriptura, no? A banda d'això, és, com ha dit el Carlos, la First Lady, la primera dama d'Islàndia, i us recomano molt un article que va publicar al New York Times expressant la seva opinió sobre el que representa avui en dia ser una primera dama, no? Les contradiccions que això implica, no? Per una banda, doncs, et permet, és un altaveu perquè les causes en les que creus arribin més lluny, per una altra, doncs, té les servituds de que de vegades has de fer coses que potser no faries, no? Directament. I després, amb ella, tenim a la Ilse Sigurdardóttir, que és una autora que, pel que m'han comentat, doncs, amb l'Indrida estan aquí, són dos autors de referència que, a més, van publicant, no?, bastant sovint, i llibres que hi ha una certa competència, sana competència, no?, d'escriptors entre vosaltres dos. Ara, quan venia jo, per preparar aquest debat, m'he llegit tres novel·les seves. Una d'elles és The Silence of the Sea, i ara aquest migdia que he dinat a prop del mar, del port, veia els iots, els grans embarcacions, i després de llegir aquesta novel·la jo mai veuré un iot de la mateixa manera, vull dir. Per mi ja no serà sinònim de luxe, de plaer, sinó de mirar ben bé aquella allà dintre que pot passar, perquè aquesta novel·la seva, una de les novel·les que té de la sèrie de la inspectora advocada, una advocada que es diu Tora Gudmundsdóttir, és una novel·la que comença amb el iot arribant a tota pastilla dintre del port de Reykjavik i enclastant-se contra el port, i la gent que esperava puja a veure la gent a la que esperaven i no hi ha ningú. Ha desaparegut tot el passatge, i llavors aquesta advocada intenta reconstruir què ha passat amb ells, no? I és un personatge molt interessant, perquè és un personatge que no té glamour, no? No té trets diferencials, però a poc a poc et vas enamorant d'ella per la seva capacitat d'anar creant un cercle, fins que al final aquí tens el tema ja capturat, no? Bé, jo el que voldria comentar d'entrada, per començar la xerrada, és aquest tòpic que nosaltres utilitzem de dir no, si per Nadal els islandesos no només es regalen llibres, sinó que a sobre queden per llegir-los junts. Això és veritat?
Just hearing that.
Yes.
Sí.
No. We're a little on delay here.
No, it is an actual thing, and it's called the Christmas book flood, and it originates, I think, from the war,
yep.
when there was no goods could not be transported to the country, and but they did have paper and a printing press, and so that became a very big Christmas present to give, and it still remains the same, that if you don't get a book for Christmas, it's really not a very good Christmas, really.
Yeah. They say every year in around October, also all the new books that are coming out in Icelandic that year, the vast majority of them come out in the lead up to this Christmas season, and then all the books that are coming out in all genres, they get published in a catalog that gets sent free to all the homes. And I think it's read almost as much as IKEA's catalog when they have a new one that comes out. And you know, it comes out and you put it on the table and you circle the ones you want most and leave it out somewhere obvious. So people can see your Christmas wish list. And then they do, yeah. And then it's nice to get books on Christmas and open them. And then, you know, after you've eaten all the food, you sit down and read.
And you stay there for hours reading together? Or?
You know, it depends. You know, my kids also like to watch movies and things. It's, it's not a dreamland like that. But it is. There is something about the season. You know, it's a very dark time of year. Where people, you know, you light candles and, share stories and read things. And the crime genre, I think, is especially popular.
Yeah.
Especially in Christmas?
Yes.
Especially at Christmas, yeah. People, and they're usually the best-selling books of the season are usually the crime novels.
Mm-hmm. In Norway, it's Easter. They like to read crime on Easter, Iceland, crime on Christmas.
Preparant el debat, he estat buscant dades comparatives homologables dels hàbits de lectura a Europa. No és fàcil trobar-les perquè són dades que no sempre coincideixen i no es poden comparar i de vegades estan una mica antiquades, però serveixen de referència. Les que he trobat de la Federation of European Publishers estableixen que l'any 2016 el 85% dels islandesos havien llegit almenys un llibre a l'any. A Espanya estàvem al 60%. Alemanya 75, França 69. Només Noruega anava una mica per davant d'Islàndia. I una altra dada encara més rellevant és que entre les persones que havien llegit més de 10 llibres hi havia un 35% a Islàndia i un 11% a Espanya. Només Luxemburg i Finlàndia tenien nivells de lectura que s'aproximaven una mica als d'Islàndia, però per sota. Clar, la diferència és d'un 35%, 10 llibres, a un 11% aquí. Tenint en compte que els que esteu aquí, aquesta mitja la supereu àmpliament, imagineu-vos amb altre tipus de trobada quina mitja trobaríem. No? Quin és el motiu d'aquest èxit? Perquè, clar, per una banda, és veritat que el clima potser ajuda, però també teniu Netflix i teniu altres competències.
Well, I always like to say as well that Iceland, we win everything in per capita statistics because we have a small population. Yeah. So everything is very good per capita for us. There's a long history, Irsa could also talk about that too, of reading and of, I think, pride in literacy and literature that stretches back to the Icelandic sagas from centuries ago, and an emphasis on the importance of being able to read. So, you know, in the Middle Ages, people couldn't be confirmed into the church unless they were literate, and that, you know, applied. There was an emphasis on literacy for both boys and girls. So there was this a long tradition of doing that, and a pride in doing that, and a pride in the storytelling that you still see to this day. You know, and of course, though, we do have challenges. We're always trying. You said there is Netflix. You know, we're always trying to encourage our kids to read more, and those sorts of challenges that we see elsewhere also exist in Iceland, though.
Yeah, and I think also the climate. Mm-hmm. We came here from a snowstorm, where you're not going to go outside or do anything. So, and also traditionally, we don't have to look very far back, in my opinion, when we only had one TV station. And it only played things in the evening, nothing on Thursdays, nothing in July. And what they were showing was really, really bad. And so people were very good at chess at this time and did a lot of reading to get, like, the entertainment. But now, like we said, we have Netflix, we have lots of things. But the book has somehow managed to stay strong. But reading is going a little bit down, I think.
It is, and it's a challenge people talk about. But again, with a small society, this is the plus side, is that, you know, Irsa is your neighbor or somebody else you went to school with, or you're the parents of some of the, you know, your kids' friends do this. So there's also a much closer connection to everything that's happened. So when a book comes out, you want to support the people you know. Or another genre that is very popular, I would almost say right after crime fiction, is biography.
Yeah.
It's very popular to write not controversial, scandalous biographies, but books about people who've led interesting lives in Iceland, because so many people have had a connection to them personally.
Ah, okay. El factor de proximitat.
Yeah.
And what's the role of the government with this, the educational system, how collaborates to this success?
Schools. There's emphasis on the schools. There's also salaries that artists overall, so not just writers, but musicians, poets, sculptors, can apply for to earn a monthly income from the government that helps people, especially people who have a record but maybe aren't selling as many books, that helps them work pursuing that passion and their careers in writing. So there's definitely assistance in that sense.
And it also helps that you get a more variety of books, like poets and things that don't sell many books, but you want these books to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I checked, and Iceland spends over 1% of its gross national product or gross domestic product,
yes,
on culture things. But, and this is what most countries spend on their military, but we don't have a military. So instead, we have an army of artists.
Yeah,
so
that's a good headline.
Yeah,
because which is the percentage the government for culture? I mean, in the budget, in the national budget, which is the percentage for culture?
I looked there and I found it. It seemed to be, I was asking this, 1.6 for sort of. It's arts, culture, sports, and then another 0.5% for media. I don't know if you include
for
that.
Media.
So 2.1% then.
Okay. You know, why do you think Icelandic literature has all this success abroad, especially in countries like this?
That's difficult.
You know, crime, I think, helps with the whole Nordic noir genre. And different things go in fashion. I think Iceland overall has also come in fashion in the last 10 years. People just, it's more on the radar after, you know, volcanic eruptions and financial challenges and tourism increase, so it's just on people's radars, and then people are interested in learning more about it. And I say this sort of as with a foreigner's eyes, because I was born and raised in Canada, so maybe I see things a little bit differently there. But what we see are, you know, stories that are taking place in, if we look at it from a foreigner's eyes, in a unique landscape, in a different environment, in those different circumstances, but they're still human stories that everyone can relate to. And so you have something that's relatable and understandable in an environment that is, quote-unquote, exotic and different for people.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the crime novel, what's been the biggest help is the popularity of Nordic noir. And it helps to have, like, a brand that you go, so many bookshops in many countries will have a special bookshelf with Nordic noir grouped together. And why is Nordic noir popular? I think it's you know, this blood on snow, cold, and I think it's also nice to read about, because the Scandinavian countries tend to be looked upon as being like the perfect countries in a way, where it's really nice to live, where everyone is thought taken care of from cradle to grave, and then it's nice to know that horrible things can happen there too, you know?
Yeah. Sí, perquè jo em preguntava, hi ha una escriptora de novel·la negra, que és la que potser ara està venent més novel·la negra a Espanya, que és Dolores Redondo, que també participa sempre en aquest festival, que un dia li vaig preguntar per què no ambientava mai a Barcelona una novel·la. I em va respondre que no podia ambientar una novel·la negra a Barcelona perquè a Barcelona només li han passat coses bones. Llavors, no li sortia de dintre, no? Ambientar una novel·la negra a Barcelona. Ella la seva gent la té aquí, la seva editorial la té aquí, el Premi Planeta, el Premi Nadal, sempre que ve aquí doncs ve a divertir-se, no? I no li surt. Jo li voldria preguntar a la Irsa si creu que l'ambient aquest que ella a les seves novel·les descriu, molt influït també pel col·lapse econòmic polític d'Islàndia, que va ser especialment virulent amb aquesta darrera crisi econòmica, crea aquest ambient ideal per una novel·la com la que ella fa, una novel·la de crim, una novel·la negra.
Yes, I mean that was helpful. Yeah, it's definitely you can't as a crime writer in Iceland you can't go to the newspaper to look for inspiration because we don't have very good criminals. They're really just total idiots. Yeah, and I can give you. There are many examples. One was we had the first case of blackmail, mm-hmm. and there were these two women, and they were trying to blackmail the prime minister, and they had blackmailed some other guy, and then it was really easy to prove this blackmail because they gave a receipt when they got the money.
Yeah.
So this is Icelandic criminals. So you can't. You have to. You know, try to be. A little bit. And there was a big discussion. I said, does blackmail should it have VAT or not?
Yeah.
But so what you do is like in the series that I'm writing now, which is a very urban series that only takes place in Reykjavik. I used to write a series that kind of went around the country. Is to look for things that you find, because even though Iceland is a very nice country and it's as good as it gets, really, but still there are always things that go wrong. And you look for these things and you try to sort of pinpoint if there's something that you feel is so wrong, then maybe somebody who would be a little bit more deranged than I am might actually think that's a reason to kill somebody. So I write about, I seek things like bullying, kids bullying, mm-hmm. Surrogacy, you know, I try to find things that are being discussed that are going wrong and take them, inject them with steroids, make them horrible, and then I have a inspiration.
Do you go to look for foreign crimes to take them? And
not really. Well, the book that you were discussing, I took, that was based on, or it was like a modern day interpretation of the Marie Celeste mystery. Which was a ship that everybody disappeared off. So that was sort of my modern day edition of that story, yeah.
Hi ha una altra qüestió que jo sempre em pregunto, perquè, en fi, jo he escrit dues novel·les de misteri, però ambientades en el segle XIX i no hi havia aquest problema. Però el problema de la tecnologia, no? La tecnologia que, per una banda, és un problema molt important a l'hora de dibuixar una escena de crim i de fer que el personatge no la tingui al cap de 5 minuts, perquè el mòbil l'han geolocalitzat i s'acaba aquí la trama a la plana número 5, no? Per una altra banda, també és un avantatge perquè incorpora noves vies de trames, no? Per exemple, The Absolution, que és la última novella publicada en anglès traduïda a l'anglès de les que ha fet la Irsa, que sembla que té dos o tres més després d'aquesta, tot es basa en un crim que ha estat difós per Snapchat a una sèrie de persones relacionades amb la víctima, no? Com tu planteges aquest problema? O sigui, has hagut, tu ets enginyera també, has hagut de fer un aprenentatge d'aquestes tecnologies per saber exactament què pot fer algú per imaginar-se un crim que sigui més o menys perfecte?
Yeah, there's a tendency or a trend now in mm-hmm. Iceland to write about periods that they didn't have this technology. So we're having a lot of crime novels taking place in the 50s, 70s, and so on. For me, I think it's important that you also have crime novels written in the present, because who is going to write about the present? Somebody in 20 years when technology has gone even further? Yeah. So I don't know, I don't mind it. I think you can use it to your advantage. You can, as a writer, you have to be able to set up situations and scenarios where technology plays to your advantage or that you can find a way around it. So, and also I'm an engineer, so for me this
challenge.
Is just, yeah, and I it's no problem for me to understand it or And so I like it. I actually use it. And I want people to read my books now. I have absolutely, I don't care at all who's reading me in 50 years when I'm dead.
Yeah.
Probably nobody, and I don't care. I want people to read them now because they're important now.
Yeah.
So don't forget to buy them after this interview. Yeah.
This question is not specifically about yourself, but do writers make a living of writing in Iceland?
In Iceland? Not many. I think there would be maybe 5 of us, and you have to write a book a year if that's going to be the case. But then we have what Elisa was describing, which is like a writer's stipend, where the government will pay you a salary for being a writer. But those of us who do make a living, and especially from translations, we don't apply for these grants because they should be left for the people that need them. They're not for me, and they're not for Arnaldur or Ragnar or, you know. Mm-hmm. So we don't go there.
But the people who then maybe have... They've published 1 or 2 things. They have a sort of a reputation, I guess, as good writers, but they wouldn't be selling enough copies.
Mm-hmm.
They're the kind of people who get the salaries for maybe 2 years at a time, 3 years at a time. And I like to think, or I hope, that it's popular, especially leading up to Christmas. But for organizations or companies, things to have a writer come in and do a reading or do a talk or for a workplace. And my impression too, and you know, my husband has been a writer and published several books, is that people are generally good about understanding that that is something that people should pay for, and that they do, you know, people can earn an extra living that way, and they're not saying, oh, well, you're going to sell a few extra copies of your book so you can spend your time reading for us for free. People generally realize that you have to pay people also to go and do those readings. So
you don't have a problem with a great problem with piracy in Iceland, do you?
Not so much with books. Do you
a little
that?
Bit.
Is that,
yeah.
No?
We have
a little
this,
bit.
A little bit. Yeah, especially with audiobooks.
Audiobooks.
Yeah, yeah. That is. We have a library for like the blind and the people who have dyslexia and things, which is fantastic. I mean, that has to be there. But these codes tend to kind of filter out, and you see on Facebook people saying, I'm listening, or they will even say to your face, oh, I'm taking my bike to work, I'm listening to your book, and you'll say, oh, is it out on audiobook? No, my son is dyslexic, so I'm using his access to the blind library to listen. And you go, oh, come on. But it has to be there. It has to be there for the people that really need it. And it's just sad that it is being used in a bad way. But I think that will slowly, you know, disappear. I think people will come to it. It's kind of new, and that's always...
Una de les coses que ens va sorprendre quan va arribar aquí fa 10-15 anys la literatura negra, sobretot del nord d'Europa, de Suècia, d'Islàndia, amb el cas d'Indridason, era el seu enfoc feminista, no? Que el fet de que hi hagués comissaris feministes, no? Era algo que aquí va sorprendre. Ara tenim el cas que deia abans de la Dolores Redondo, pues que té una comissària que està dibuixada, el personatge està perfilat amb aquest enfoc, no? Com ve això? Com arriba aquesta és una cosa dels autors o és una tradició d'anar incorporant aquesta preocupació pel gènere a la literatura islandesa, és més recent?
I Yusa can probably answer this better as a writer, but you know, there's a strong history back to the sagas of strong female characters in Icelandic stories, and I think that just carries on, and strong women in general in society. So I think it just goes without saying that there would be plenty of characters who are strong women in the Icelandic books.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the reason that Icelandic women are very, you know, close to almost equality is quite good in Iceland. It has always been. Is that we were so poor. There was no option for women to be a butterfly or like somewhere with a, you know, everybody had to work. Everybody had to put their best foot forward. And out of that came, I think, equality. Mm-hmm. And but in books, it's like Alyssa says, it's just that's the way the society is. And I was once asked to come on to BBC radio interview about Iceland passed a law where you're not allowed to pay a woman less than a man. This was a law. And they asked me to come on the radio and get some guy with me. And then they assumed, they didn't even say that this man would be against it. And then I told them, you know, there's no way I'm not going to find any man in Iceland that's willing to come on the radio and be against this. That's just, you know, everybody agrees this is, of course, the correct thing to do. So they found some news guy that they knew Icelandic to come, and he almost just, you know, stopped mid-interview and ran out, you know,
yeah.
because they wanted him to be against equality, and you just don't get yeah. that in Iceland.
True equality has nothing to do with, you know, increasing one at the expense
no.
of the other.
Yeah.
It just makes
yeah.
them everybody benefit.
Yeah.
També en el trasfons de les novel·les de crim, les novel·les negres d'Islàndia, el tema de la violència masclista està molt present. No? Tots els autors... Quin és l'estat d'opinió ara mateix sobre la violència masclista? Sabeu que hi ha països on fins i tot no porten estadístiques. Aquí és un país on sí que es porten estadístiques des de fa uns anys. Hi ha una preocupació real. Quina és la situació, la preocupació real sobre aquest tema a Islàndia?
You're talking about domestic violence
yes.
in general yeah. and things. I mean, domestic violence is an issue in Iceland just as it is everywhere else. Mm-hmm. I hope that, you know, now we see that it is something that is being talked about more openly mm-hmm. so that people, you know, recognize even more how unacceptable it is. It's something that I've tried to look at a lot in my capacity as First Lady in that we see in Iceland that women of foreign origin, immigrant women like myself, mm-hmm. Are at sort of more increased risk of that. In the women's shelter in Iceland, for instance, 50% of the women who are staying there are women of foreign origin, whereas people of foreign origin in the country make up only 14% of the country. And so this is something that obviously we need to look at as a society as a whole. And I think that when we talk about the gender debate in Iceland, and it's something that people talk about, Iceland being a leader in the battle for gender equality, one of the areas where we say that we need to do a lot of work on is areas like domestic violence mm-hmm. and reducing those situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. I think a lot of it came to light also when we had a female police chief, mm-hmm. and she decided to put a lot of focus on this domestic violence, which mm-hmm. is the crime. Mm-hmm. But the problem had been that it's very difficult to get the victims to go all the way to court. You know, but by the time the case comes to court, they would have had a perfect case, she was describing, and then all of a sudden the woman who has been beaten says, like, no, it was a curtain that fell on my head, or because the abuser has time to get back
yeah.
and you know, somehow claw his way back into the life. So it's a very difficult thing to fix completely, but bringing it into the public's general discussion helps tremendously, mm-hmm. because it's less of an embarrassment for a woman to come out, because you need mm-hmm. you need your relatives and friends, and this mm-hmm. is probably a very difficult thing to say if it's not generally accepted that these things happen, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and it doesn't say anything about you as a woman that you mm-hmm. put up with it for some time.
We hope, you know, it shifts the shame from the person
yes.
who comes forward to the person who has done the mm-hmm. abuse, obviously,
yeah.
and is the one who deserves to be ashamed and punished.
Abans mencionava la Irsa el tema de que escriure en un país petit té les seves, d'alguna manera, condiciona la literatura i la recepció del fet literari, no? Quan publiques una novel·la teva, tothom vol endevinar o identificar les persones, l'entorn... Això passa sovint a les teves, després a la recepció de la teva novel·la, no?
They like it when they can identify the places, yes. And I used to get a lot of requests for, like, can you put me in your book? Can you use my name?
Yeah,
sure. And I would always say, yes, that is not a problem. And then that would be the first victim in the book, you know, who would die a horrible death. So I don't get asked very much anymore.
There was a crime television series that called Trapped that's very good that aired a few years ago. And what was talked about a lot was the fact that it was meant to take place in this tiny community, say this few, that in the east of the island where the ferry from Denmark comes. And it was partially filmed there, but it was also partially filmed in Siglufjord, another town in the totally other side of the country or in the north. And so, you know, that was fine for everyone from abroad for watching it, but it drove the Icelanders nuts because people would be watching and you'd be by the ferry and then all of a sudden you'd go over to the church and that was in a completely different part of the country and that was very confusing for people to watch.
But I have there's an Icelandic crime author who is about to be published in Spain called Ragnar Jónasson, and we're great friends. And and he killed me in his latest book. So my next book, I told him, okay, now I'm going to... So I have to find a way of killing him in some awful way to get back at him.
Lirsa també és autora de novel·la juvenil, juvenil infantil, no? També. Com tu fas? De vegades estàs in the mood for writing for young people, in the mood for writing for adults. Com tu fas?
I started writing for children. I wrote 5 books and... the last book actually won the Icelandic, at the time, Children's Literary Award. And I didn't like that book, so I decided to stop writing. I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing, if this is considered a really good book. And then I took 2 years off, and when I felt the need to write again, I wanted to do it for a more mature audience. And it's also because my children's books were humor, and humor... is really a very fine and difficult art in a way, and it's like walking on a tightrope. It's very easy to go over the top and just be ridiculous or just not funny enough, and so it's very difficult. Being horrible is really easy. That's like a huge abyss of endless, you know. So I enjoy that. But actually, this year I am. I'm going to write 2 books, and one of them is actually a children's book. So I've taken more than 15 years off from writing, and then I've found the need to write again a children's book.
For children.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun to be writing something different. And I don't last very long, so I wrote a series of 6 books, then I wrote ghost stories, then I wrote a different type of series. And I find that I can keep writing and I can keep being inspired if I'm not always writing the same. I have to change around a little bit. So that helps the creative juices, I guess. Yeah. And also, one more thing, because we're talking about equality. One of the reasons why I'm writing this children's book is that the children's book list for the year, for the most sold books, is always... it's like... almost all men.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take my book and I'm going to show them, you know, put them down. I'm going to sell more. Oh, yeah. Just watch me. If I have to go to every school in the country to read from the book, I will do that. Yeah. So.
En la novel·la aquesta que us comentava de la Lisa Sigurdardóttir, que és The Absolution, un dels personatges es planteja algo que aquí ens afecta molt o ens sona molt, no? Que és que diu que no pot viure al centre de la capital perquè els preus dels pisos per culpa del turisme se n'han anat a uns nivells ja insostenibles. Sabeu que esteu en una ciutat que aquest debat el tenim molt viu i que l'estem vivint d'una manera molt intensa, no? Reykjavik també està patint, potser encara més per les seves dimensions, no, aquest problema.
It's coming.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it has, I don't know, since the crash, we've had like an influx of tourists. And also what happened in the crash is that a lot of the pension funds and so on were not allowed to make investments abroad. Mm-hmm. So what they did was buy up all of the small apartments and put them on Airbnb. So you, as a young person, the people who were buying these small apartments, you can't compete with a pension fund. So this ended up in that these apartments that used to be the ones that young people would buy they just got sucked up by big money in a way.
There was such an increase in tourism so quickly as well that there weren't, you know, the number of hotels that had been built and accommodations hadn't, you know, caught up yet, which is,
yeah.
And that's changing now. But also due to this huge increase in the number of tourism, there's been a broader, bigger discussion on tourism and sustainability, which I'm sure you have as well in Barcelona, and a way in which, you know, tourism is the number one contributor to Iceland's economy now. It's a very important part. People generally, statistics show, still look at it in a positive way, but it's not sustainable to have heavy seasonality. So officials now are really working on, and I think succeeding, in increasing the seasonality, so encouraging people to go to Iceland at all times of year, not just during the summer period, encouraging people not just to be in the capital area, but to travel, you know, travel around the country, or at least focus on a different region in addition to maybe just the capital area or just the south, and really especially sort of educating visitors on safe, sustainable, responsible travel. And that involves everything from protecting their own safety to not picking up moss that takes hundreds of years to grow back, to not camping on farmers' property and things like that. And those have been quite conscious moves to try to increase the value for the tourist. And in conjunction with that, that also includes more limitations now on, you know, the number of nights that you can rent out your apartment on Airbnb. And I think now that the increase in tourism has slowed, that allows the system to catch up a little bit to it.
And also the new hotels.
And also the new hotels, which, yeah, there's many that are scheduled to open this year, next year, the year after.
What's the image you have of Barcelona in this subject? What have you heard about it? About Barcelona and the tourism?
Oh, we're tourists here, so I don't think, yeah.
Just that there's a lot of
before
tourists.
Before coming here, what's the music?
What do we like?
Oh, everything. The food, you know, the culture, everything. Yeah.
We're happy with the weather. I don't think we want to go back.
No,
to
we're not going back. No.
Quan llegeixes els llibres de la IRSA, són d'aquests llibres que et vas apuntant llocs de la costa, en fi, que escenaris i llocs on t'agradaria anar quan visitis Islàndia. No? Fins a quin punt aquest litoral tan màgic que descrius, per exemple, a la novel·la aquesta Sé quién eres, que és Ekmanfik, no? és el títol en islandès, fins a quin punt aquests escenaris estan amenaçats o no per culpa de tot el que comporta el turisme o l'explotació del país?
Well, you're not a Justin Bieber video, so I guess
No, I think we're talking about like on the West Coast, and they don't. Mm-hmm. It's probably as far as you can really go. It's quite difficult to get there. And especially to the place where that book is set, because it's an abandoned town. You have to drive or fly to a very small town called Ísafjörður, and then you have to take a boat, and it's not accessible except for a few months in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I think that they would just be happy to get more people. The countryside has you know,
it's not all overrun.
No, not at all.
But they have, you know, Justin Bieber filmed a video in a canyon that few people got to, but it wasn't hard to get to, and they had to close it. There were so many
people coming.
People who went.
Com arribes a construir el personatge de Tora, aquesta advocada que és la que investiga les trames de diverses de les teves novel·les, de la sèrie Tora? Com el construeixes?
In the Thora series, this was my first crime. This is after I finished writing the children's books, and I wanted to write a series. And everybody else who was writing crime novels, and I said at the time was writing about police, so I wanted to write something different. I was just saying that at that time it was only men writing crime, and I was the first woman. So immediately I became the queen of Icelandic crime, which is really not worth very much when you're the only woman. But now we have lots of women writing. So I needed this woman to have an occupation that would bring her again and again and again into contact with murder. It would have been really easy and nice for me if she could have been an engineer, mm-hmm. but nobody wants us around when there's a murder, so that didn't sound good. I build my stories. Sometimes it's the location that I see and like, and sometimes it's something that I read in the paper. Sometimes it's just something that pops into my head. But a novel, like a crime novel, because they're quite complex, it never hits you all at the same time. You get like a seed for an idea, and then you think about it, and like, how could this be more than just a short story? And then you add things on and have maybe some side stories until you have something that is both bone and muscle in a way. And then finally you have something.
Estàs pensant en tornar amb Tora, amb Zora, amb el proper, amb un llibre proper?
About Zora, no.
No.
And Zora, when I started to write her, I wanted to make her as different from me as I could. And so I made her tall and blonde and divorced, and the only thing that was similar was that she had a son and a daughter, like I do. And then in the book, she becomes a very young grandmother. And just before the book is about to come out, my son phones me and says, can we meet in a coffee shop? And I said, why would we meet in a coffee shop? You live in my house. You know, we live in the same house. And that was to tell me that he was about to become quite a young father. So automatically, everybody thought that I was basing this son of Thora on my son, which was not the case. It was life imitating art, not the opposite.
El problema que deia
but I made sure that nothing bad ever happened to her son, in case, you know, yeah. I didn't want to jinx
que
it.
Clar. Deies que hi havia, que després de tu havien vingut més autores, women writers. Quin és el moment ara? De quin balanç tenim? Com, tu, per exemple, que tens, bueno, que vas crear aquell festival... Com ho veieu, això, ara? Realment hi ha una incorporació, una lectura de novel·la escrita per dones? Hi ha hagut un canvi important els últims anys?
There are now probably just as many women writing crime novels than men. Mm-hmm. The problem, I think, with the buyers, I don't know what it is, that for some reason, with all the equality that we have in Iceland, the people tend to buy more books by men, and women buy more books than men, so it's really strange. And like this last year, on the top 10 most sold books of the year, I was the only woman. And I think I'm a little bit lucky in the sense that what I write, maybe because I work in a very male profession, that it kind of suits men and women.
Or you're well established too. I think there's
maybe,
kind of a tradition,
yeah.
You know, that people will buy always the new Irsa book for Christmas. I mean, you're well published enough that there's a few authors like this that people will just buy the new book when it comes out. But it's also, I think, not really to be political, but why it's all the more important to, you know, remind people, it's almost like when people say to kids, draw a picture of a police officer or a doctor or something, and they almost always draw a picture of a man in those things, that we need to remind people, you know, if you think of a crime fiction author and people automatically think of a man. And it's why it's great that, you know, festivals like Isla Noir that Irsa is running and other festivals, I think the curators, hopefully, are very cognizant of the need to showcase the women authors. And people are generally doing that, and that is important. So when the media are interviewing authors, they will think about, do we have a gender balance on this?
Yeah.
And judges for awards and all kinds of festivals and appearances, people know, you know, if a company had three authors speak or four authors speak at their event and they were all men, they would be lambasted in the media. It would never happen. And that's important.
M'agradaria tancar amb demanant-vos que ens féssiu, que ens donéssiu algun consell que ens aconselléssiu llegir algun autor o autora que encara no tenim detectat amb el nostre radar, quins noms recomanaríeu? De gent, autors joves, no traduïts encara, i que si hi ha algú d'alguna editorial s'animi a traduir-los, que és una cosa encara bastant complicada amb el tema d'Islàndia.
I would absolutely say Ragnar Jónasson, and he is going to come out in Spanish soon.
In Hamn to the festival, he's very nice.
Yes, yeah. And Hamn come to the festival. He's really, really, a good crime writer and all around good guy.
Després, quan algú vulgui que li signi llibres la Irsa, que ara quan acabem podreu pujar dalt, com ha dit el Carlos, a signar, li podeu preguntar com s'escriu, perquè jo crec que serà més més senzill, no? La grafia de saber exactament.
And also, if anybody is thinking really in the long term, I would encourage you to learn Icelandic and work as a translator.
Yes.
Into Spanish. We need translators. We give out awards to people if you're a good translator, and then you can discover the next big thing coming out of Iceland
yes.
as well.
Sí, perquè pensava, abans de començar estàvem comentant amb la cònsul honorària d'Islàndia que hi ha realment una manca de traductors, no? Els traductors de la IRSA, crec que hi ha un que viu a Madrid, l'altre viu a Londres, però no tenim a Barcelona un traductor i el català no està traduït, no? No, sembla que no.
No,
o sigui que aquí, qui s'animi serà el primer o la primera.
I keep forgetting that I keep thinking that I understand what you're saying, but but it does sound. I mean, I think for Icelandic people, it's Spanish, and I think also Kalon would be easy to pronounce, whereas we're really bad in French, and so it's probably the opposite way around too. Yeah. That it would be easy for you to speak Icelandic.
Okay,
yes,
thank you.
More, yes.
I'll take note.
And Irsa will invite you over for supper.
Oh, yeah. Yes, no problem.
Yeah.
Bé, doncs, ha estat un plaer conversar amb aquestes dues representants de la cultura i de la literatura d'Islàndia i recordar-vos això, que els llibres de la Irsa estan disponibles a dalt per qui vulgui que el signi, que crec que són 3 o 4 tens traduïts. 4 tens, no? Em sembla que són al castellà, Random House.
Yeah,
4 of them.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Bé, doncs moltes
I'm
gràcies.
Almost finished one, so don't tell me what happens at the end. I've got 100 pages left of one of those books, so nobody say anything to me about
okay. Molt bé, doncs moltes gràcies i
thank you.